A new short documentary asks a provocative question: who owns history? A history of the world, according to Getty Images, shows and explains how some of the most striking footage ever shot lives behind paywalls. For instance, some of the best images of the explosion of the Hindenburg or the Apollo 14 moon landing. Private companies like Getty Images own them and charge a fair bit of money to get access. Until now. Let's talk now to the filmmaker behind this documentary, Richard Misick. Richard, welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you.
The film's about 18 minutes long, starts with a montage of historical footage from the 19th century all the way to today. First of all, why did you want to make this film?
I think the film came from a frustration as an independent filmmaker of wanting to make films that use archival footage, especially documentary newsreel, but just not being able to access any decent quality images. If you want to see, I don't know, you know, the crash of the Hindenburg in 1937, you can see lots of really low quality images of it on YouTube, but nothing that you can actually put into a film. And I sort of realized that many clips that actually are not under copyright are still monetized by archives. So perhaps, you know, you could argue they should be freely available, but they're not.
Yeah. Well, and you go on to explain this in your film, how much the footage costs, depending on what you're using it for. And then you explain that once the copyright of an image runs out, it goes into the public domain. We in the news business, we're talking about this often, as you can imagine, what can we use? But public domain doesn't necessarily mean the image is actually public. Can you explain that for us?
So all humanly created works are automatically copyrighted as soon as they're created. And then 70 years after the creator dies, typically, the copyright lapses and they enter a legal copyright-free state called the public domain. And that's how culture stays alive. But for photographs and films and videos, the principle of a public domain doesn't quite work. Because when a book becomes public domain, you can get hold of a text from a library or online or from a bookshop. But there's no mechanism which ensures that when an image enters the legal public domain, it actually becomes publicly accessible. Mm. So, as I say in my film, most of the time, if an image, for example, was previously behind the paywall of an archive, it just stays there. And so, as a result, every year, ever more images legally enter the public domain, but actually relatively fewer of them become publicly accessible.
Well, for an example, let's play a clip from your documentary. Here you are talking about this extraordinary aerial footage of the Chernobyl nuclear power plant just after it was damaged in that catastrophic accident. Here it is.
Here's another clip that migrated west. Who filmed this? Who flew into the most dangerous place on Earth to get this image? And why? I follow the video's chain of ownership backwards, from Getty to an archive in Paris. Do you know who filmed this, I ask? They don't. How did you get it, I ask? They don't know. All they care about is how many seconds of it I can afford.
And that's one of the points you're trying to make, yeah, that companies in this space, Getty is a giant company in this space, is what they're focused on is monetizing it, not what the actual history is.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the Chernobyl image is a really interesting one. I found it first on Getty Images, but it says nothing about who filmed it, where it comes from. It just provides a contact to the archive from which it came from. So I contacted the archive, and the people at that archive had no idea where it came from, except that it came from a Ukrainian production company. Then I went to the Ukrainian production company, and they had no idea where it came from. It probably just landed on their plates sometime in the 1990s when the Soviet Union broke up. And so it's this image which it's really impossible to know who created it anymore through the image. It's lost all metadata in a sense, and it's just become a visual asset that archives sell and resell.
What about the argument that we have to buy material, art, things that people produce in order to support them, in order to give a financial motivation for people to, you know, produce these images, produce art in the first place.
Absolutely. And I would also absolutely agree with that. But I would say two things in response. Firstly, for example, in the Chernobyl image, the artist is long forgotten. The artist is not making any money out of his process. Mm. It's just the archives that are selling the content. So, repaying artists is a separate thing from repaying archives. And of course, also, there are costs involved with being an archive and, you know, having a huge amount of images on your, you know, on your servers, digitizing them, upconverting them, storing them. So, of course, there is a need to charge for images. But I think there's also, I suppose, any archive that holds public domain images in its collection doesn't own them. It's just a custodian of them. And I think specifically with regard to public domain images, rather than images which are owned by artists, I think there's a responsibility that comes with being custodian of them, just as if you're a custodian of an ancient building or a, you know, a great treasure. There's a certain social responsibility that comes with that.
In the end, with your documentary coming out and these images being able to be seen by viewers, you've purchased the rights to these images, and are you just trying to liberate them yourself?
Well, I mean, that's just a very small symbolic act in a way. It doesn't have any real-world consequences. I think the main goal of the film is just to raise this as an issue. There are many solutions to the issue that, you know, public archives could put more public domain images up. The funders of public archives could require that in their funding agreements. Private archives could maybe release every year. They could just release new collections of public domain images online. Most public domain images don't actually earn very much money for archives, so they could even do that without losing very much income. So there are many possible solutions to this problem, but to find them, I think the problem itself needs to be acknowledged. And I think currently it's not. And that's ultimately the purpose of the film, to raise it.
Going forward, what about the 21st century? We're all walking around with cameras in our pockets now. Is the documenting of history democratized now, where there's going to be much more access, say, 100 years from now?
Oh, that is a big question. The filming of history has been democratized, but there's still power relations going on. Like, for example, during Black Lives Matter, you would have protesters filming themselves in order to protect themselves from the possibility of police violence. But then they would post those images on social media, and then those same images would be used by the authorities to identify protesters who had committed acts of vandalism. Mm. And so, you know, images always have been and always will be a site of, I suppose, power conflicts. And ultimately, it's especially with social media, there's a lot of material going up, but where is it? It's on the servers of YouTube, you know, or Google, and it's not stable there. And what will happen to that material in 10, 20, or 50 years' time, when the people who have hosted it have died, or when terms and conditions have changed and it's been taken down? That's really a big unanswered question about, you know, the filming is taking place, but where is the protecting and the preserving going to take place?
We've been talking to filmmaker Richard Misick. His new documentary is A History of the World According to Getty Images. It's really worth a watch. Richard, thank you very much.
Thank you.